Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, January 25th, 2022. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hello, Melody. How are you?
Oh, just peachy keen today. Just had a heat wave today and Eastern Shore of Maryland. I think we actually hit 40 today.
Oh, 40. Oh, my God.
40. 42, maybe. And you could actually go outside without a coat. Pretty nice.
I thought you were going to say you were peachy because it's National Irish Coffee Day.
No, that's not why.
Good way to start the day. But it's also National Florida Day.
Oh, yes. I wish I was there.
Indeed. Indeed. Mm-hmm. It had
I
79 degrees in southern end of the state. How about
not
that?
Not too bad.
Yeah.
You know, it cracked me up. I heard I was just listening to some weather channel or something today, and they were talking about, Florida's cold dipping, maybe. They were talking like it never happens in Florida. It might. You know, it does happen, but they always act like it's, something very rare. But it does get cold in Florida. They can have frosts, and they can ruin their orange crops and so forth. And, it does happen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And,
but let's see what happened to gold and silver today. Gold had we had a high of 1855. Right now in the New York spot price aftermarket, we're at 1849, up $5. Silver tried to hold that $24 level, couldn't do it, $23.92, down 16. Platinum was down a buck at 1036. Palladium had another up day, up 59 at 2287. I wonder how much of that increase is all due to what's going on with Russia at the moment, since that's where most of your palladium does come from. Crude oil, probably another impact on the price today with that possible situation that is beginning to build. You have crude oil up $2 today at 85.32. And the plunge protection team gets the golden star for the day once again. Yeah, the Dow over 800 points, I believe. 800 points to the negative. And they were able to bring it back, not to the upside like they did yesterday when it was down over 1,000, but they brought it back to 66 points to the downside. So 34,297. The S&P was down 53 points at 4,356. The NASDAQ, though, was down a little over 2.25%, 315 at 13,539. So not so good on the NASDAQ. And so they focused on the Dow today. And I figured, well, you know, if they didn't bring the NASDAQ back like they did yesterday, that means maybe their ability to bring it back is beginning to grow a little thin. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. So it looks like they concentrated on the Dow first. We'll see what happens. The S&P was still down 1.25%, but it's just some commentary there, folks. Knowing and watching these markets for as long as I have and seeing how they react and how things can be done and so forth. It's just kind of another day. And the big question is this it? Is this the biggie? Or is this just the beginning of the biggie? Or just another warning sign from the biggie? Don't know. That's why you don't wait to see what happens. You get prepared and you get yourself protected with some gold and silver. Buy that wealth insurance. That's all you have to do. And then you can watch it unfold and all your assets will be protected. No guarantees. And we're all going to be affected somehow, some way. And it was interesting, Dave, I wanted to look up we're going to touch on Russia a little bit again today. heard that Putin had come out at one point in time and said that if the next war wouldn't be with weapons per se, as in the past, but it would pretty much be a digital, you know, an economic, a financial war. And with the amount of debt that we hold, with the amount of debt that, well, I don't think they hold that much of our debt anymore, but China still does, and other financial tricks and hacking and everything else that can be done, that's how wars will be waged in the future. So, yeah, which is far more devastating, you know. They don't want to destroy buildings and their land and so forth, but they'll destroy the nations financially.
There's a lot to be destroyed. The potential is certainly there. It takes a different kind of skill level to make that happen. And again, the potential for retribution is high. So yeah, that's an area where you got to watch out what you ask for, because just a lot can happen. Both sides of the coin.
Well, the thing, the way I see it, even if China decided to dump our debt and so forth, it's still going to hurt their economy. So everybody still gets hurt, and I don't know which is, at least if you do bombs, you only have a certain area that's getting destroyed. I don't know. Not being a general. These are just my thoughts and so forth. But there is was it Greenspan or Bernanke maybe? I'll have to look it up to see who said it. The derivatives, which would all be tied to everything, and they're weapons of mass destruction. So it's just not what we see about the dollar and so forth. You got to think about all the other things that are all the whole web that has been weaved, and so many things that we don't even know about and how they're connected, because all we focus on are the numbers. All we focus on is the daily Dow, NASDAQ, S&P. As long as they're higher, for the most part, everybody feels kind of comfy and warm and feels safe and secure. And that's our economy. So, and all eyes, you know, and again, I just, when we get to certain points with the Fed, yes, they're meeting today and tomorrow, and all you hear about are they going to do this? Everybody's trying to make their bet, so they become out heroes if they guess it right and so forth. You know, they've been telling us for how long that there's going to be a tightening in their policy, that they've cut back on the bond buying purchases and so forth. And I don't know, Dave, with the violent stock market correction that we've seen this month, I'm not sure they're going to do anything, but they are expected to issue a new statement. Showing its continued resolve to fight inflation. Mark Cabana at Bank of America said, we don't expect them to sound dovish. The bond market seems to be reacting to the drop in equities plus the geopolitical tensions. So maybe the Fed sounds not as hawkish as they otherwise would have. This is the first major battle that the Fed has had with inflation. And after 2 years of their super, super duper easy policies that were implemented, they now have to face that task. And what say you?
I don't know what to say. They're just everyone saying the same thing they've been saying for 3 months, whether they're on the Fed board, of governors, FOMC, or whether they're in the media or in academia, it's hard to pin anybody down because, you know, in times like these, the uncertainty is profound. And I'm not sure that at this point in their two-day meeting or day-and-a-half meeting that they know what they're going to do or what they're going to say, you know, after the meeting's over and they issue the statement and Powell has his press conference and, you know, all the media just go home giddy that they have a lead news story for Wednesday's newspapers. Actually, they'll go online tonight. I think the big words or phrase of the day, Melody, is I just don't know.
And does it really matter?
Well, yeah.
Not that you don't know, but I'm talking about the Fed. You know.
Oh, no, I know. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, that's another question.
We'll see how it plays out as we usually do, and it's, you know, to me, sometimes I just get worn out with it because when you understand what's really behind it, what they're really protecting, and that we really don't have the great economy that they tell us about, and we don't have the great jobs numbers that they continue to tell us. I mean, so everything else that they tell us is just a bunch of lies. And again, it's not what they do, it's what they say. And I think he's going to come out and he's not going to disrupt the markets. Or maybe I remember Clinton, you know, they'd let it drop and then he'd come out and make his statements and the markets would automatically stop and turn around and so forth. And he might be playing that type of a ball game, might go ahead and make his projections for rate cuts and so forth, see how the markets react, see if they can hold it to these levels without it dropping. If they can't, then he'll make a special news announcement saying, well, you know, I guess we'll continue to be a little bit more accommodative.
Yes.
Because they'll do everything and anything to protect those stock markets to some degree. So
some might ask where they've been the last couple of days in that respect.
Well, they've done a lot. They were in there. I mean, you can't bring back a stock market from 1,100 points to positive 100 with, you know, without any intervention from the Federal Reserve and government and banks. Just doesn't happen.
Yeah. Well, the scary thing is that, you know, they're, I mean, as much as they say they're committed to transparency, there's, as you said, there's so much we don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows what's, I guess we'll have to look at that to see what's going on in the repo markets, for example. But that assumes that, you know, those transactions are on the books. But with the kind of losses this month, especially the last couple of days, you wonder if credit's getting tight at the Wall Street banks.
You know, I didn't do the 10-year yield. The 10-year yield was 1.778, so that was up a little bit. Asia was negative across the board. But Europe managed to be positive after they were negative for 2 days or 3 days in a row. So they were able to come back just a little bit, nothing earth shattering, but they followed our lead yesterday. So there was a follow through from our markets to theirs overnight. And so housing prices, they rose again back in November. Prices rose 18.8% year over year. And that's the CoreLogic Case-Shiller National Home Price Index. Yet that was a little slower rate than the October pace. And this consists of a 10-city composite. That climbed 16.8% annually, down from 17.2% in the previous month. So you got these, you know, the same markets, again, are posting some stunning gains, and you know who those cities are, you know, the same ones, Phoenix, Tampa, and Miami. So, Dave, which ones didn't fare so well? Let me guess.
Searching for sunshine and warmth. Well, you got the Windy City. I mean, Land of a Thousand Lakes. You got Chicago, Minneapolis, and the nation's capital showed the smallest annual gains, though they were still in double figures, up around 11% each. And you got mortgage rates didn't move a whole lot the last couple of months, although they are rising. Now I've seen the 30-year fixed over 3.25% percent. Although you know, again, they're much lower than they were in the past. But rates are now about 75 basis points, 3/4 of a percent above where they were just a year ago. And that's going to impact on prospective buyers, especially at the low end. And we'll see how that proceeds as we get closer to the end of winter and into the spring months, which traditionally, you know, the good months for home buying.
It'd be interesting to see if anybody, I can't imagine with the low rates, but if how many homes picked up on the adjustable rate mortgages. I can't imagine very many with these low rates. You'd have to be pretty naive to people, do so. But
yeah, people are locking in.
Yeah, that's what they'd be stupid not to, but at these lower rates, but because where else were they going to go? So, but that doesn't mean that people won't be over their heads when people are buying these high homes now, way overvalued, and you have this little bit of correction, they'll all be upside down for a very long time. Very long time. So, we're soon to go into the tax, well, we are in the tax season. I guess we were able to start doing that. And officially, tax filing season officially began yesterday. And it's hard to believe that there's still taxpayers out there that are waiting for last year's refunds.
Millions.
Oh, that's right. All that money went to the stimulus. That's where it went. Mm-hmm. In the form of what, $600 or $1,400 or whatever it was the last time. That's where that money went. It's amazing that some of those funds haven't been given to folks. Typically, the IRS receives 35 million calls during tax season. Last year, it got 119 million. Why so? Why so?
Not so many, not so many return calls, though.
Wow. What I do here is our music, so we're going to be heading into a break, so we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter that Dave produces and edits, and he does a great job. It's a very nice newsletter. So we thank you for doing that. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, about the 8,500 troops being relocated. We're not relocated. They're just coming to attention, I guess I should say, to be prepared. They're not actually deployed yet, but they're on heightened alert. And of course, they're awaiting orders to deploy to the region. So, but I think we already have a boatload of folks in Ukraine. The NATO Response Force is a 40,000-strong multinational unit made up of land, air, maritime, and special operations forces that NATO can deploy quickly wherever needed. I thought I heard where we have like 20,000 or folks in Ukraine, Dave. Maybe they weren't all military, but I think the number is bigger than what they're portraying. Not sure.
Yeah, I thought we had a very modest military presence in Ukraine itself, although there are, well, we have several hundred thousand spread throughout Europe, but it's mostly Western Europe. Yeah, our this NATO response force could be the ones that get close to Ukraine's border should there be a Russian invasion. Although, who knows? I mean, if it gets out of hand, we could be asked to go in. But I'm not sure that it doesn't sound like our big European allies. I mean, as tired as we are of military conflict, it seems as though Germany and France in particular aren't eager to send their troops in. But they have forces. They have their own troops among this response force. So it would be a shared, a shared event should we... you know, whether we go in or just get close and advise and deliver artillery and what have you.
Well, NATO isn't even supposed to respond. We talked about that, too, before, I think. And Germany is not interested because they don't want to do anything to mess up their agreement with Russia. So, you know, they're not going to do much. They're going to sit back and I don't know what their obligations are with NATO if they don't comply to what NATO does, but it's like, who cares? You know, who cares if you're a part of NATO or not in today's world? You know, I mean, that's an old time, you know, none of these programs that they came out of World War II, none of them have ever been revamped. None of them have ever been reviewed. Do we even need them anymore? And so forth and whatnot. But that's just my opinion. Most of them, you just send money to, and they collect money. And everyone, where does that money go? It's, you know, it's And most of it is the United States money, our taxpayers, that's our money, going to places that probably shouldn't. But anyway, doomsday clock. We've talked about that over the years. I think everybody's aware what the doomsday clock is. And it's having a birthday. And it's really close to that midnight hour, isn't it, Dave?
Yeah, we could have another song leading into this story. Who sang that? The midnight hour? Was that? I can't remember.
Or the eve of destruction.
Oh, well, in 1947, a group of scientists who had worked on the first nuclear weapons dreamed up the doomsday clock as a metaphor, warning just how close humanity was to destroying itself. The iconic clock has been the symbol of the bulletin of atomic scientists ever since. And today, on its 75th, well, not today, it's actually this month, the 75th anniversary, the group's experts are saying we're closer than ever to that dreadful wake-up call. The clock is reset every January, and not even at the height of the Cold War were its hands this far into the final countdown. Certainly a pretty grim way to celebrate your 75th birthday, but bulletin editor John Mecklen says the ingredients for a possible doomsday scenario are more numerous than ever. Now, when the clock was first depicted on the June 1947 issue, set at 7 minutes to midnight, the editors were concerned solely with the likelihood that atomic bombs would soon rain down on the world's capitals. Now, the Bulletin Science and Security Board members considers more than that when they decide where to set the clock's hands throughout the year. In 2002, scientists moved up the doomsday clock from 9 to 7 minutes to midnight. Well, 9 minutes to 7 minutes to midnight, citing too little progress on global nuclear disarmament. Now, in their unnerving but entertaining new book, The Doomsday Clock at 75, Bob Elder and J.C. Gabel trace the history of the clock, which they argue is the most powerful piece of informational design of the 20th century. Now, the clock came about simply because the association's editors, most of whom had been scientists on the Manhattan Nuclear Project during World War II, wanted a striking cover for the first issue of the new magazine they were launching. Mecklen recounts that the editors were afraid that the nuclear weapons they had helped create were not fully understood by either politicians or the public. They wanted people to understand that these weapons could literally end civilization and perhaps even the human species. In any event, the design was made. It featured just the 15-minute, the last 15-minute portion of the clock, never occurring to them that the designers, that the editors might someday want to pull that minute hand far below the 45-minute mark. World events have only once raised that happy dilemma in 1991 after U.S.-USSR Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty talks, actually, after it was signed. In any event, Mecklen says the doomsday clock was always meant to be an alarm. It just so happens to be from a group of scientists who were against the use of nuclear weapons. They say it's not a political stunt, as critics decry. But they say if everything's a crisis, then nothing's a crisis. And that's a scary thought in and of itself, Melody. In any event, that's this week's Levity is Golden. Happy 75 Doomsday Clock.
I remember reading into that and how they decipher and how they make their calculations as far as, and it is really kind of interesting. I mean, I read that a long time ago. But it's something to be to pay attention to.
Something to be aware of.
Yeah, something to pay attention to. And, you know, it's really frustrating, Dave, because you hear little bleeps about all the pandemic money that was sent out to businesses and so forth that people have spent it on cars and trips and homes and didn't go for payroll. And again, just another way that, you know, it was abused because, you know, money coming from government, there wasn't any accountability, and you went into a lot of these states and they just gave money to their butt. You know, it's the same old thing. And now restaurants, they want more relief. And granted, the restaurants were hit probably the hardest, I would think, with even your retailers anymore.
Yeah, the numbers don't lie.
So the National Restaurant Association sent a letter to Congress just yesterday wanting more money. 80% of the restaurants suffered a decline in customers. The industry group, which represents more than 380,000 restaurants nationwide, asked lawmakers to add to the Restaurant Revitalization Fund that was established as part of the American Rescue Plan Act just last year. The Restaurant Revitalization Fund, the RRF, say that three times, Restaurant Revitalization
Fund. I like that.
Well, you might be able to. They provided about $29 billion to help restaurants. All of the funding was distributed by the Small Business Administration. 2 years after or into the pandemic, restaurants, hey, they're still struggling. You have the labor shortage, supply chain delays. The letter to Congress says they must act now to replenish the RRF in the upcoming legislative package to fund the government, Dave.
Yeah, this is disturbing. I mean, the National Restaurant Association said 177,000 eligible restaurants applied for RRF grants but didn't receive them. And half of them said their restaurant wouldn't be able to stay open without a grant. Now, it's clear that the program, I mean, everyone was in such a hurry to get this program set up so these billions of dollars could be released, but the administration of it was just horrendous. And we still don't know overall how much more we're going to learn of fraud and abuse. We do know that so many of these loans and grants, as Melody indicated, went to the buddies of the banks, the big banks who were administering some of these programs. It's quite discouraging. It's got to be quite discouraging to these other largely smaller restaurant owners. Alarmingly, the letter to Congress continues. The industry still hasn't recreated the more than 650,000 jobs lost early in the pandemic. That's a loss 45% more than the next closest industry. Data show that 3/4 of restaurant operators reported that business conditions are now worse than just 3 months ago. And 74% said their restaurant is less profitable now than it was before the pandemic started in early 2020. So interesting. I certainly don't see anything coming out of this, Melody. Do you? Whether it's this or, you know, airline assistance or any other industry specific.
You know, the problem is, hey, you want to help somebody, you loan them the money. You don't give them grants. That's helped the corruption and thievery of these funds. And guess who gets to pay for it? Us taxpayers. So good money that was supposed to go to help people. Guess what? You know, we don't even get paid back for giving. We just gave people money. And it's just like, even it's just, you know, it's just not right. But who is saying anything about it? No one. Absolutely no one. I guess maybe they don't say anything because they know nothing will be done about it. So I guess they're, you know, figure they're just wasting their breath. But it just makes me feel better when I get it off my chest. Grants, bad. You want to give them a loan? Let them qualify. Give them a lower, little extra lower rate. And give them the money, but they have to pay it back. That's what's called business. Not handouts, not bailouts. And it's just like, and I get a lot of people lost their jobs. I get a lot of restaurants closed their doors. Life's tough. You know, did anybody save for the rainy day? No, they all went into debt. That's why it's so important to get out of debt and to save for the rainy days. Because rainy days always come. And they're only as rainy as prepared as you are. If you're prepared, you get a drizzle. You know, so you can go out without an umbrella. But, you know, it's just that simple. And, it's disgusting. It's literally disgusting what is going on in D.C. with this money. And all the taxpayers get is inflation. Of course, we've had inflation every day for years and for decades, but no one talks about that. So anyway, we have got a minute left of the program. We didn't talk about Bitcoin much. You know, it's been down quite a bit. It's probably coming back just like anything else. You put a little money into it and it comes back. But it's lost nearly half its value just since the November peak. Wiped away billions. I think I saw where it wiped away trillions. I'm not sure what maybe the first drop. But Bitcoin's latest sell-off parallels the recent stock market declines, of course. And again, I thought everybody was buying Bitcoin. So when the stock market dropped, it was a safe haven. Well, it looks like a great safe haven to me, doesn't it, Dave?
I've been reading. There's actually a number of academic studies that have been peer-reviewed that are showing that not only is Bitcoin not a safe haven asset, it actually is now being correlated to the stock market. So,
yeah. How can nothing be a safe haven? Anyway, one of my favorite songs is coming on. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's taking care of clients this final segment. Please call her at 1-800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. Our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. Actually out this morning. You can sign up for free weekly newsletters and blogs at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. My article in this week's edition is about gold, high inflation, and market volatility. After a trading day that saw the steepest drop in the S&P 500 since 2008, briefly dropping into correction territory with a big sell-off, as Melody mentioned, and then saw it actually close up 0.3%, the word that comes to mind besides phew is volatility, a lot of it. Since the beginning of the year, the CBOE VIX Volatility Index is up about 74%, having risen from a more modest number of 17.6 to 29.9 at yesterday's close. In fact, today it went over 30 again. In fact, over the past 2 years, market volatility has more than doubled, and that's something precious metal investors should be paying attention to. Now, without getting too technical, the VIX signals the level of fear or stress in the stock market using the S&P 500 index as a proxy for the broad market, and thus is widely known as one of the fear indexes. CNN has one, too, that we quote every now and then in this program. The higher the VIX, the greater the level of fear and uncertainty in the market. Levels above 30 indicate a lot of investor fear and enormous uncertainty. It's what we have now. 5 years ago, Mira Shawn wrote in Market Realists, notably, we often see that an increase in volatility can lead to a rise in gold. Other studies also confirm a positive correlation between the VIX and gold prices, but are too detailed to summarize here. But the article does cite a few of them if you want to look them up. Now, this news comes as one senior market strategist envisions gold returning to $2,000 this year, even as the Fed begins to reverse its forever QE. George Milling Stanley of State Street Global Advisors says that continued high inflation pressure means that real interest rates will remain in negative territory despite 3 or even 4 Fed rate hikes this year. He told Kitco News, if we do get 4 rate hikes in 2022, interest rates are going to be at 1%, and that's nothing to be terrified about. Paul Volcker took interest rates up into the teens back in the 1980s when we had much higher inflation. Miller Stanley added that going back to the 1970s, when the economy has been sustained, has seen sustained levels of inflation above 5%, gold prices have seen nominal returns of around 15% and real returns of about 10%. Now, last December, just last month, government CPI showed the annual increase of over 7%. And many economists believe that rising commodity prices and wages will likely keep inflation above 5% for a good part of 2022. And if that happens, Milling Stanley predicts, then the price of gold is going to be on the verge of $2,000 very, very quickly. We could see that taken out this year. Investors will remember that the last time gold breached that mark was in August 2020, hitting its all-time high of about $2,070 on August 6. Despite all the talk about the Fed hiking rates soon, and we'll learn more tomorrow about the Fed's schedule in that respect, a new debate is evolving over whether tighter money will actually rein in inflation. Prices up over 7%, the highest rate of increase in over 40 years, or in about 40 years. Bottles of Excedrin migraine are in better supply at the White House than N95 masks. And until we figure out what's really causing the inflation, we won't be able to treat it, as Stephanie Kelton, economist Stephanie Kelton, wrote last week. She noted, it takes a certain hubris to assert that by nudging a single price, the Fed funds rate, by nudging that higher, the entire economy can be shifted back to a stable inflation path. Is she on to something? No, I think it's the point to seriously consider. Is it a mistake to believe the fix for inflation that worked for the Paul Volcker Fed 4 decades ago will work again for Jerome Powell's? Well, other economists think the Fed needs to do something post-haste, i.e. yesterday. Too big to fail, Bank of America's head of economic research, Ethan Harris, warns the Fed is seriously behind the curve and has to get serious about fighting inflation. Former Treasury Secretary Larry Summer has been arguing the same thing. He and others argue that too much fiscal and monetary stimulus is to blame for the price increases. The pandemic is still making the economy uncanny and unpredictable. Kelton and many others cite the continuing supply chain snags as part of the problem we face. Economist James K. Galbraith agrees. He blogged last week, if supply chain issues can be sorted out, the current inflation tizzy will probably subside early this summer. Now, the White House was saying that over last summer, but Biden also said last week that fighting inflation was the Fed's job. So who knows where all this ends up? Government's closely watched employment cost index is out this Friday. And even though the Fed prefers the PCE, Personal Consumption's Expenditure Index, it's been closely watching the recent surge in this somewhat under-the-radar metric. It was this wage growth data that initially pushed Jerome Powell and a few of his FOMC colleagues toward a more hawkish, that is, inflation-focused posture on interest rates. Civilian compensation costs grew 3.7% annually as of the last quarterly report. And economists are estimating the upcoming fourth quarter figure at 4.1%. Most people would view news of a strong wage increases as a good thing, right? I mean, just ask the CEO of Too Big to Fail, J.P. Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon. He had a pay increase in the tens of millions. But as Matt Phillips reminds us, for Fed policymakers, too much wage growth can be a sign of a spiraling inflationary cycle. And that's where workers, squeezed by rising prices, demand raises from employers, who then raise prices further, and on and on and on. Where it stops, nobody knows. Now, is that pure search for this theoretical equilibrium, as the economists like to call it, that I'm afraid is out of reach right now? And perhaps not just this time around, but at all times. The Fed's just going to have to decide to come down on the side of inflation or on the side of maximum employment and let the chips fall where they may. Either way, it's not going to be pretty, So make sure you're prepared and insured. Remember, gold's not only an important hedge against rising prices, but as Milling Stanley points out, it can also provide downside protection as equity markets weaken and market volatility picks up even more steam. For all your gold and silver needs, call us 1-800-375-4188. Now, as we know, the Fed's comprised of a chair and a board of governors nominated by the president, confirmed by the U.S. Senate. It also includes a rotating group of Fed bank presidents across the country and the Federal Open Market Committee. Its primary purpose is to keep the American economy strong by taking steps to ensure maximum employment as well as controlling inflation and its effects. How does it do these things? Well, it has a number of financial tools at its disposal, but perhaps its most important tool, and the one it's at least best known for, is its ability to control interest rates, which means controlling the cost of borrowing money. The consumers and businesses need to borrow money from banks, which means that banks need to borrow money from some other entity, it themselves, the Fed. And when banks borrow money from the Fed, it gets to determine what interest rate those borrowing banks will pay on their loans. That's why any action the Fed takes to raise or lower interest rates affects everything virtually we consumers need and use in our daily lives, including things like credit cards, car loans, and mortgages on our home. What does this mean for our economy? Well, the Fed's greatest power is that if the economy is sluggish and not performing well, it lowers interest rates in its wisdom. That tends to encourage businesses to expand and people to begin spending again because the cost of borrowing that money is now cheaper after interest rates are lower. And conversely, if the Fed feels the economy is growing too quickly and is overheating in a way that raises inflation, like today, it can and will increase interest rates to slow expansion and spending, thereby cooling off the economy. The Fed says it prides itself on being independent from normal political pressure because its members serve fixed terms. It's independently funded and therefore not held reliant on Congress for its funding. And while the power of a president to remove a member exists, it rarely has ever happened. So all this begs the question, should the Fed be audited? Well, of course it should. Why? Because it possesses extraordinary power to impact the American and global economies, and it's largely unanswerable, unaccountable for its actions. An audit of the Fed would not upset the current balance, but it would give the president, Congress, and most importantly us, the American people, the opportunity to see exactly what it does. Senator Paul Rand, who I'm normally not a big fan of, has introduced a bill to audit the Fed that's called the Federal Reserve Transparency Act. His bill would do several things, including the Nonpartisan Government Accountability Office, GAO, to conduct a thorough audit of all Fed transactions, deliberations, decisions, or actions regarding monetary policy. A few years after the Great Recession, 14 years ago, the government accountability, the GAO, got a rare opportunity to peek behind the curtain at the Fed. Although the review was somewhat limited in scope, it was able to audit the agency's emergency loan programs. And what it found was troubling, to say the least. Our friends Pam and Russ Martins at Wall Street on Parade have written about this extensively. This particular audit found conflicts of interest and no-bid contracts galore. It also revealed that the Fed authorized $16 trillion, at least, in bailouts to businesses and banks without so much as a whisper in the halls of Congress. $16 trillion. Could be as much as $29 trillion. Unsurprisingly, the Fed would prefer not to be audited further with any degree of substance by the GAO or anyone else, especially on its interest rate decisions. Yet, the Fed insists its reluctance is centered on fears of political interference. Now, we know the Fed doesn't want an auditor peeking over its shoulder as it makes decisions that are going to impact millions of families. I mean businesses. I mean the stock market. Instead, it's just asking us to trust that everything will work out. And we're supposed to believe that it's best for the American people and its elected representatives to be blindfolded. Well, I don't think so. As former Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis once said, sunlight is said to be the best of disinfectants. The Fed must be subject to an audit that will provide transparency, accountability, and public confidence in its policy decisions. Now, remaining time in this final segment, Bloomberg News ran this headline over the weekend. U.S. stocks historically deliver strong gains in Fed rate hike cycles. Yesterday's Wall Street on Parade, Pam and Russ Martins reminded their readers of what happened in 2018, the last time the Fed gently tapped its foot on the brake four times. The Fed wasn't at all aggressive with rate hikes then, gradually raised the Fed funds rate by a quarter of a point on March 22, June 14, September 27th, and December 20th. But that was enough. The deeply unsettled markets, particularly Wall Street's too big to fail banks. Well, the Fed gave the too big to fails a big fat gift at the end of the day, and it could happen again. We were not going to have time to finish this story. I'll try and do it again on Thursday. But hold on to your hats, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be quite a ride over the next couple of months. And that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners. Be safe out there, please. Bye-bye.